Yesterday, the self-described Islamic State released that video purporting to show ISIS militants smashing priceless artifacts in Iraq. They've also reportedly captured 300 Assyrian Christians in Syria. Despite the fact that ISIS faces a U.S.-led bombing campaign in Syria and Iraqi and Peshmerga forces of more than 200,000 in Iraq, the ISIS force of 30,000 or so is growing. Why is it so difficult to beat ISIS? David Kilcullen is a former military advisor to NATO and the U.S., a veteran of the Australian Army. He's now with the consulting firm Kairos Associates. David, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
What's the short answer? Why is it so hard?
The short answer is that we're playing catch up. We allowed ISIS to build up without significant opposition. We waited until it broke out and made a very significant expansion of territory last summer, and now we're trying to catch up to something that's been growing for actually for years, but we haven't really addressed properly until recently.
Well, now that the U.S. allies, Arab nations are addressing ISIS, now why is it so hard? We mentioned the math. There are so many fewer ISIS fighters than other fighters.
I think if you think about ISIS, you have to think about it in terms of four related threats. The threat that you've been talking about, which is the destabilization of Iraq and Syria and Libya and Lebanon and the wider Middle East and North Africa area. The second threat is the flow of foreign fighters, which we're talking about now, thousands of people from Western countries traveling to join ISIS and some of them returning to their countries of origin. The third is this idea of remote radicalization, the idea that you see lone wolf attacks and attacks by small cells of people, as we've seen in Denmark and Belgium and France and so on.
Yeah.
And then the fourth threat is the effect that the rise of a group like ISIS has on other groups, not just Al-Qaeda, but many other groups that are of a similar extremist point of view. And I think what we're seeing here is a reinvigoration of the global jihad in a way that we've really not seen for maybe 5 or 7 years.
So
I think if you're going to have an effective strategy, you've got to deal with all four of those threats.
Yeah. A joint report published today by several leading rights groups, including the Institute of International Law and Human Rights, says the military effort to combat ISIS isn't enough. Does that translate into the U.S., other Arab countries have to put boots on the ground?
Well, let me put it in perspective initially. The number of airstrikes that are being launched against ISIS is roughly one-tenth the rate at which we dropped bombs on Afghanistan during the invasion of Afghanistan in 2001. And it's 1/48 the number that we dropped on Libya at the beginning of Operation Unified Protector when we tried to defend Benghazi. So we're talking about a much lower level of air power being applied to this particular problem than we've seen in other cases. So it isn't just a matter of lack of boots on the ground. It's a matter of really not a sufficient application of air power as well. And I think there's a number of reasons for that. Probably the most relevant is that this is the early phase. What we're trying to do, I think, here is to provide cover under which the Iraqis can recover from their defeats of last year. The Kurds can become more capable at the kind of urban fighting that we're likely to see in the spring. And the Syrian rebels can start to get their act together in a way that may allow all those groups to effectively oppose ISIS on the ground. And I think we would be hoping to see a significant uptick in both air support and other kinds of support as and when those ground forces are ready to move against ISIS.
Let's just stay with the air support and the bloodlines, the revenue that's feeding ISIS, pipelines in Iraq. They're operating as you know, they're claiming to be an Islamic State, but they're operating like a state, buying and selling oil. Why not just bomb the pipelines?
We've been doing that. And in fact, that has reduced the oil production on the part of ISIS by about one-third. Actually, the drop in global oil prices has had a more significant effect on ISIS's ability to export oil. But, you know, it's important to realize that that's not the only source of revenue for ISIS. They also get a lot of money from taxation from the population. They also get a significant amount of money from sales of things like food, water, cooking
icons.
Oil.
We mentioned the video of them smashing icons, but they're also selling them.
It's also worth pointing out that in both Iraq and Syria, in the areas where ISIS is in control, many people who draw government salaries from the governments of Iraq or Syria are still getting paid. And so there's actually a significant amount of money coming into ISIS-controlled territory from the same governments that are theoretically opposing it.
Well, what about the other tentacle, social media? It's well known that ISIS is way ahead of the U.S. and its allies in its use of social media. We saw some of the emails and texts that were being sent to those young men in Brooklyn who were just stopped from going to fight with ISIS, literally bullying them into coming to join the caliphate. How do you cut that off?
Well, I think the challenge here is that if you cut off social media to a group like ISIS, you also cut off a lot of the connectivity with the outside world that people in ISIS-controlled areas make use of. So, for example, in Raqqa, which is the capital of the Islamic State, so-called, there's a group called Raqqa is Being Silently Slaughtered, which is an activist group that opposes ISIS and is getting the message out because you have a lot of connectivity. The systems are still up, and if you take them down, you will harm innocents as well.
So, David Kilcullen, you have said already that you feel there's got to be much more of a military effort. What else do you think has to happen to beat ISIS?
ISIS is fundamentally a state-building enterprise, and that's the important thing to realize about it. It is not like al-Qaeda. It's not trying to generate a global underground revolution. It's trying to build a physical, real state. And I think that the way that you deal with that threat is you kick the hell out of that state. You destroy its ability to control territory. You destroy its ability to oppress local population. And I think you recognize that there's a lot of people within ISIS-controlled territory that are thoroughly opposed to the group. I'll take the city of Mosul for an example.
In fact, the U.S. hopes to in the spring. This is where joint forces hope to retake the city of Mosul.
Yeah, and I'm rather appalled that we've been telegraphing our punches so far out in advance and talking about the kinds of attack that we're planning to do and the literal timing of the attack, which is, you know, not necessarily best practice militarily. I would just make one other point, right, which is I think that our discussion about ISIS very heavily focuses on where a lot of the attention is right now, which is Iraq and Syria. But ISIS has also captured ground in Libya. It's formed a group in Sinai that's really destabilizing parts of Egypt. It's got groups in Afghanistan and in Pakistan, and it's starting to make inroads into other parts of North and West Africa. So it's a much bigger problem than just Iraq and Syria. And I think the reason that ISIS is having so much success, it's not just social media. It's that you've got a caliphate that controls territory, that's a real entity, and it invokes various religious obligations on people that support that strain of Islam. Now, that goes away once it's no longer a caliphate that controls territory and runs cities and is a real state-like entity. And that's why I say that the most important thing about dealing with ISIS right now is to take away its state-like status, the control of economy, territory, population.
And by the way, do you agree with Graham Wood writing in The Atlantic and others who say that we have to, meaning the West, has to address the fact that ISIS is claiming parts of Islam and it has to be recognized that they are claiming religious foundation for their movement?
I think we do have to recognize that Islam plays a significant role in the way that ISIS sees itself and in the way that it determines what tactics to approach and in its governance strategy, the way that it approaches governing the territory that it controls. That doesn't mean that all Muslims support ISIS by any means, nor does it mean that ISIS is representative of Islam as such. But you know what? You know, I was brought up a Catholic. I don't get to have an opinion about that. That's a matter for Muslims to talk about. And in fact, what I don't hear in some of the discussion is a recognition that many Muslim scholars have already rejected ISIS. But that doesn't get away from the fact that a lot of the people that are joining ISIS are motivated by what amounts to religious conviction. And unless you deal with the group as it really is, as distinct from how you would like it to be, the chances of success are really low.
David Kilcullen, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.